Reverend Dr. Levering, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
I would like to know your reaction to the sentencing of a young man who was involved in threats made against the First Reformed Church in Schenectady. John William Kirby Kelly was sentenced to 33 months in jail for his involvement in threats to a number of churches. What's your reaction?
Well, let's call him John. Let's make him a person instead of a figure we can all pile on. We're, you know, it's a sad time when anyone has to go to jail, especially given the state of corrections in the United States of America. But we were not pleased at his sentencing. We mourn the fact that he made some bad decisions and was in a group of people who made over 100 different kinds of attacks on different organizations, usually based on, you know, what we might call hate crimes or prejudice or something like that. So we mourn the fact that these things happened and mourn the fact that he made these mistakes and is paying for them in this unfortunate way.
What did happen? What threats were made against the church?
Well, early in the afternoon on December 28th, so it's winter time, it's right after Christmas. We're sort of coming down off of the high of Christmas. We get a call, well, the police get a call that there are bombs and a shooter with a rifle in the church. So the police immediately come over and clear out our building and set up a perimeter. All of my staff, five or six people who happen to be in the building at the time, go to a coffee shop a block away and are sort of held there, interestingly enough, for protection. And I set up with the police and a couple city officials who stopped by at the corner of the church and sort of waited out. The church allegedly, well, some of the press says the church was chosen. I mean, to be clear, I've never spoken with John or any of the people in his group. But those who have said that our church was chosen because we have a presence, we have a progressive presence, and we have a couple of video cameras that are online 24/7. So at any time of the day or night, you can go in and look at our sanctuary, which seemed to appeal to them for some reason. But on the other hand, by the same token, when the police said, gosh, what's going on in there? I said, well, here, let's pull out our cell phones and look. And we could actually see what was happening. So very quickly, we have a number of cameras. My security person was able to say no one came into the building. We've reviewed all the tapes, and that doesn't seem to be a credible idea. So we were able to reassure the police, but due diligence set in, and they then came with some dogs and sniffed around for bombs because, you know, you never know. There was not a great deal of tension at the site because we were pretty sure that this was a bogus threat right from the very beginning. But the idea of the threat itself had a certain power. So while we didn't think there was a bomb, we all were sort of mourning the fact that someone felt as though this was a good idea to do this thing. And for a long time, there was no, until the FBI and others correlated a whole bunch of data, there was no movement in the case. So that's what happened on that day. Kind of an interesting day.
What impact did this threat have on you and your staff?
That's a good question. The staff didn't take it very seriously because we have, in addition to these cameras that are on 24/7, something like a dozen security cameras. Our approach to security in an urban area is not to lock it up like a fortress because someone can always break in. Our approach is to know what's going on. And so, frankly, none of us were terribly frightened, but there was some disruption. There was police. Actually, there was a little more impact on the congregation. The congregation wasn't on the site, doesn't trust the security system as much as we do. So there was a little bit of, gosh, should we come to church Sunday? You know, if you're in a family and there's been some sort of hate crime kind of thing going on, it makes you think just a little bit. So there was some trepidation on the part of the congregation. On the other hand, there were some folks who geared themselves up and said, no, this is, we have to have a witness to stand against hatred. And so attendance was about the same as it normally was on the Sunday after Christmas. So that was the general kind of response to it. If we hadn't had quite so many cameras, it might have been different.
You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I'm talking to the Reverend Dr. Bill Levering about John William Kelly Kirby, the 20-year-old from Virginia who was sentenced to 33 months in prison for his role in threats made against more than 100 churches, including the First Reformed Church of Schenectady, where Dr. Levering led a congregation. The churches appear to be targeted because of racial, anti-LGBT, and religious animus. Much of the evidence against Mr. Kirby was found in his activity in chat rooms with known white supremacists.
When you found out that John was arrested and charged with a hate crime, what was going through your mind?
Well, religious people are in the business of knowing that we're all broken in one way or another. So there's a mournfulness. I don't think that there was a great deal of anger because the harm was not overwhelming. I mean, there was no bomb. There was no actual threat. So we sort of mourned the fact that he had made these mistakes, along with a lot of other people. I mean, he was the one that was arrested, but there was a whole chat room full of folks that were piling on the situation. Very much like what happened in Washington in January. There's some people say, hey, let's go get him. Okay, all right. And they sort of encourage each other. And there's this unfortunate event that happens. But, you know, we're in the business of reconciliation, and the justice system in Virginia was keeping us posted all the time, asked for victim impact statements, and we declined on several occasions victim impact statements because there wasn't, frankly, a great deal of impact, and we didn't want to sort of pile on this situation. We were mostly interested in the rehabilitation of the person as opposed to the punishment of the person.
Do you believe that involvement in the criminal justice system, a sentence of 33 months, which is less than the sentencing guidelines set forth for this kind of a crime, do you believe that there's a chance for rehabilitation or even redemption?
Well, there's always a chance. We wouldn't believe what we believe if we didn't believe that there was a hope that people could change. And if people can't change, boy, we're all pretty stuck. I think that there is a need for some sort of message to an individual that what they did was wrong. But just as important is some sort of structure to help people break out of the patterns that they have established. He did at the trial indicate great remorse, talking about how he got carried away. And he says he was, quote, personally disgusted by the direction that the chat room took after he left it. And the fact that he left it before he got arrested does suggest something too. I mostly mourn that this time that he's going to spend, I doubt if it will be the entire 33 months, but that the time that he spends will not in fact be a rehabilitative time, but will be essentially what our culture likes to do, which is to punish people, which often turns out to be quite counterproductive.
Is there another way that we should be responding to crimes like this?
Is there another way? We should have a culture in which it doesn't happen. We need to facilitate the lack of the polarization. And exactly what's happening today in our culture, where people are seeing things vastly different from each other and their rhetoric is, I'm surprised there aren't more hate crimes today, similar to what happened in January at the Capitol, because our rhetoric is just so polarized. And I think we're all called to humility. We're all called to a little more sensitivity to other people as people, and that people's person is more important than their opinions at any given moment. John made some very unfortunate decisions that caused inconvenience and fear, but I'm not sure this justifies 33 months of being in really unpleasant situation. We've been charged not to give an eye for an eye or not to return evil for evil, and I'm just worried that we do that so often.